Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 103, and this week's guest is Amy Nicolazza, and she comes to talk to us about her multiple click, micro click Holga work. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 103. Andrew, how you doing?
How are 103.
You? 103.
Who'd have thought, eh?
I don't think that there's a film format or any reference to 103. Room 103? I don't know.
No.
How are you?
I don't know. 127. We have to keep going. We have to keep going to at least 127.
120.
And then we'll have to do something about 127 film format. Yeah, I'm okay. I've been in the dark room because, you know, I'm filling my days of semi-retirement and trying to work out what weekends look like compared with weekdays. So, you know, it's a bit of a struggle.
It all seems in the dark room.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to limit the dark room stuff to a day a week. And I want to get out in the fens to do some pictures, some large format photography. And I want to do a lot of pinhole stuff out in the fens. Nice. But, you know, we're still under lockdown. And whilst I think I could probably get away with it, you know, it just doesn't seem right. So,
yeah.
We hope to have some relaxation on all the lockdown stuff soon. But anyway, look, I've got a bone to pick with you before I introduce Amy.
Pick it.
Lenses Podcast Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
You and me are admins, right? And
yeah.
Alex Purcell is a moderator. And I sent you a Facebook friend request 2 years ago. And it says here, cancel request. So that must mean you haven't accepted it.
I haven't, Andrew. Yeah. I have not. The only reason I go to Facebook, honestly, is to stop in to the only the Lenses podcast group. I don't have any other.
No, the groups are great.
Yeah.
And of course, the Lenses podcast group is great. And we're approaching 1,000 members. We're crawling towards 1,000 members.
Yeah, I don't. I just like to stop in there from time to time. I probably should spend more time there, but whenever I have a moment, I can kind of stop and look through. And I don't like to just go there and just like everything and then leave. I try to comment, you know, when I have a second, I can kind of enjoy it, you know. But yeah.
Okay.
So that's nothing personal. Don't worry. Or anyone else who sent me one, because I've seen a lot. And I'm like, oh, people are going to think I'm antisocial or something, but I'm not.
Well, you are.
I just don't like Flickr. I mean, Facebook.
Oh, there's a Freudian slip.
I like Flickr. It's all right. I go there all the time.
Yeah. I'm not there.
Speaking of Flickr, Andrew. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I've been on Flickr for
ever.
I'm not sure when it was. Maybe early 2000s, I guess. I'm not really sure. And one of the first people I started chatting to and commenting on pictures and looking in amazement at her Holga pictures was Amy Nicolazzo. Is that right, Nicola? Amy, sorry.
You got it.
I called you Nicola then.
Yes.
That's because I'd split your surname down into Nicolazzo. No. Anyway, there we go.
Nicolazzo. A lot of people call me Nick. Sometimes people call me Nick because of my last name. So yeah, no.
Wouldn't it be better to call you Amy?
Yeah.
That's far less confusing. So welcome. Welcome, Amy.
Hello, Amy.
And Amy is known as Dog Dreams. I don't know why. You can perhaps tell us why you're known as. So it's dog underscore D-R-E-A-M.
Double Z.
Z-Z-Z or Z-Z-Z.
Triple Z.
Depending on where you are. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Amy. You know, how you got into photography, whereabouts in the state you live, what color car you drive, what's your favorite pasta.
That's funny.
You know, you get the idea.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, let's see. I really was a latecomer to photography. I didn't start probably till somewhere around 2007. And I was actually drawn into photography because of I stumbled on Flickr, and somehow ended up really getting in loving macro photography. I just was just fascinated by this, and so that's what it started me down the road. I got my first digital camera. I think it was a Nikon D60. And started doing macro photography. And then as I, would look through Flickr and check things out, I started seeing all these really wonderful film things going on with different people. And I was like, oh my God, film photography. Like, I can't even imagine. And so I started, just kind of hooking up with people and talking about it. And then I think my first film camera was a Holga. And so I just kind of never looked back from that point on. I just fell in love with film photography. And so I still do have a digital camera, but I don't ever do anything with it. So I got started, like I said, probably later in life than most people do. I live in the state of Ohio in the United States. It's just your average state, nothing much to say there. I heard you, Andrew, say you were semi-retired. So am I. So I am a therapist by trade. I do mental health counseling. That's what I've done throughout most of my life. So I just do that a couple days a week now. And I think, like you, I'm trying to sort of figure out that balance between the weekdays and the weekends and what do you do? How do you do this, sort of thing. So
do you have a routine? Have you worked at, I don't know how long you've been gone from full-time counseling to part-time, but have you worked at any kind of routine?
I have not. Especially with the onset of COVID, it just really kind of, I think, put a wrench in a lot of things. Part of the time I've been watching my niece because they do school remotely. So we're kind of like filtering her around different family members and stuff like that. So that kind of interferes with my real development of a routine. And so I've not figured it out yet, but I will eventually. So
yeah.
Have you?
Well, in theory, but in practice, not really. I mean, I only went end of last year, so I finished full-time work, and I'm working for the same company, but just 5 days, 5 days a month. I nearly said 5 days a week. That wouldn't make sense, but 5 days a month. So, and I pick and choose which days I work, and I've got a day out with a day out taking pictures, with either large format or pinhole. That's what I want to do, because it's just in the area where I live, in the Cambridgeshire Fens. And then a day in the darkroom. So that's 2 days. And then I've got to do I've got projects to do around the house, which I've been told to do. I have to do the cleaning, the cleaning and the shopping. I'm a proper little housewife. Housewife just assumes that it's always the woman who does the cleaning. I'll stop digging. So I do a bit of cleaning. Cooking, shopping. Although the shopping's been online recently, because then I don't have to go out of the house and mix with infected people. I haven't been able to get out with a camera so for a while, really. But darkroom. Are you still darkroom working, Amy, or not?
I still have all my darkroom equipment. But last spring, it's been almost a year, I moved. Right. My spouse and I got married in 2017, and my spouse and I just moved in last spring. So when I moved in, there was really no place for a darkroom. So I brought all my equipment with me, and my intention is to at some point have a room constructed, probably in the basement. That will be my darkroom. But so for now, I'm doing digital dark room, which is nowhere near as satisfying as the wet dark room, but you just do what you can.
Yeah, well, I think I was first drawn to your work probably by your Holga pictures and panoramic-y, either endless panoramas or micro click type panoramas. Tell us a little bit how you got into that kind of work, because your work's very kind of distinctive, it's it's very dreamlike, and that's probably helped by the sort of repetitiveness of the micro clicking and your subject matter. Lots of water, skies, beautiful landscapes. So tell us a little bit about how you got into that sort of style of Holger photography.
Well, again, like I think I had said a little bit earlier, so I was, was just always watching what other people were doing, and I was seeing some of this really fantastic work out there with the Holger. And I don't know at what point I stumbled on the microclicks. It was, probably a group or something on Flickr that I came upon, and I was just like, holy crap, what is this? How do you do this? And so it's been a while, so I'm assuming that what I probably did was just research. Mm-hmm. I just Googled and found out how you did the process. And then I went out and started just trying it. And it's funny to me because my microclick work over the years has evolved, or it's changed in different ways. But when I first started out, I really had no idea exactly how to do it, even though I had, taken instructions from Google. And it just took me a while to kind of figure out how you do it and how many clicks and like, oh, I don't have to do a certain amount of clicks. I can do as many clicks or as few clicks as I want, sort of thing. So it's an ongoing experiment, I think, to this day.
So
I still...
No, I was going to say, so you take a picture and X amount of clicks is to a whole nother frame. So let's say it's 30 clicks. Are you just stopping at 15 clicks to make sure that it's overlapping? So if anyone is thinking in their mind about, who don't know, that's what I'm thinking, because I'm looking at your pictures and they don't they do overlap, but it's weird how you stitch them together. So, yeah.
Well, okay. So like, it depends. It just sort of depends upon the mood I'm in, how many clicks I do. So like earlier on when I first started, it's a body movement and it's a click cool. thing. So you're starting at one point of, I usually would like, sort of in the viewfinder, I would start at a point just with my eyes, and then I would just sort of follow it slowly and find a stopping point. So I knew exactly how much I wanted to put in the frames. And then it's a matter of you take the first shot, and then you just advance the film as many clicks as you want. Two clicks, six clicks, 12 clicks, whatever kind of suits you. And then you take the next, you move your body slightly, you take the next frame. And then you do the same thing. You advance by four clicks, how many ever clicks, you move your body again ever so slightly, you take the next frame. So, and it just proceeds like that till you reach your stopping.
When you say your body, forgive me for being really stupid here, but you're talking about your camera body, aren't you? Not just your body.
Well, your upper body, I think, is what you're doing. So you're kind of panning.
Sure.
You're panning in a sense.
So did you start off by just advancing the film to the next number, and then kind of panning, and then you realize, oh well, maybe I don't have to click as much, and I'm sure it's a process. It was a process to get through it, and if it's a secret, you don't have to tell us. We understand.
No secrets. No secrets whatsoever. I guess I'm just trying to think. Like some of the earlier work that I did, some of the images came out kind of looking like they reminded me of like dinosaur skeletons. The way, because I didn't, I only advanced the film maybe two clicks, and then I'd shoot, and then two clicks, and so it would be very, very segmented. Yeah. A really interesting kind of look, and it would remind me of like a dinosaur. And so like sometimes I would do that, and I'd look at the end product, and I'd think, I like that, or nah, that's a little bit too confusing for me. So like the next time I would go out, I would just experiment, and maybe now I would click six clicks before I would take the next picture. I've never been one of these people that's kind of like, there are exactly X number of clicks between frames. Probably should have. It might have made the whole process easier. And actually, I think the last time I was out, I actually did count the clicks between frames. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is interesting. So there, medium format film, there are, from my calculation, 24 clicks between frames. So from the start of one picture to the start of the next, there are 24 clicks. So, so in that, if you're wanting to use two frames, then you've got like 48 click or 48 clicks that you can divide. So you could do four panels of, what would that be? Eight clicks each, I think, something like that, between shots. Am I making sense when I'm saying this?
Totally. Are you using a tripod as well, or are you just freewheeling it and handholding?
No, I again, you know, like I'm just one of those people, like I don't take all this stuff out there with me. It's usually just me and my camera. And, you know, if it's a little bit blurry, as a matter of fact, I use like the Holga soft surround lens a lot, or filter over my lens to make it even more blurry and more soft than it already is.
That's cool.
So
do you use that? I think sometimes you use, because Holga's have a little set, don't they, of things that just the holder slips over the lens and then you can put in
the splitter and all that stuff.
And the center, there's a red center, clear center with a red on the outside. But I read somewhere that you'd also fitted, like I've done, a step up ring in your Holga.
So that I can attach, like red and orange and yellow filters, particularly because I like what it does with the sky. But I just recently started, I bought a blue filter because I'm really dying to see what a blue filter does. And even if I Google it and read it, it still won't make any sense to me till I actually see, you know. Yeah, so until I try it. And so I'm kind of excited about that.
So a blue filter would cause red things to be more vibrant because the blues cuts and lets more, I don't know.
It'll lighten the cut. The color, the sort of non-scientific rule is if it's it lightens in tone the color of the filter. So, and it does that by, if you put a blue filter on, it's going to be passing more blue light through and blocking the complementary color, maybe reds.
Blue
will get a lot of density on the negative, nice density. So blues are going to come out way light, so it's like old blue sensitive orthochromatic. Blues, you won't get your dramatic skies.
But blues, your reds and greens will, your greens will change.
Your reds will go way dark. So it's quite an interesting. You'll get an interesting look.
Yeah, you have to try it.
Yeah, I'm very very excited about that. So I did. It's a standard step up ring. I forget what it is, 49 to 52 or something like that.
It's 40 something, isn't it? Screws in the front with a bit of persuasion.
Yeah.
You know, quick little thing that makes that a lot easier, if you take a little piece of sandpaper and just kind of go around the inside of it all the way around a couple of times, it takes off just enough that your threads will.
I read that after
we'll do
jammed
it level,
mine in.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
I jammed mine in.
Because it'll go on, but it's normally kind of like crooked, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's hard to get it going straight, but if you take a piece of sandpaper and give it a couple of passes on the inside of it until you can starts going on straight, and then you can just, you know, do it that way. That's what I did anyways. It worked really good.
Well, that's a good thing to try. I never even thought
like
of that.
I don't give Andrew all my tips, but I'll give them to you, Amy.
All right, thanks, Corey.
I did this micro-click thing recently. I've not done it much with a normal Holga, but I did it with a Holga wide pinhole camera. And I didn't know how many had, I hadn't counted the clicks between one frame or the other, you know, but Holga wide, I think I probably had the 6x12 mask in there and
the pinhole.
And I just did an exposure and moved the camera a bit and clicked it on a few times, and it came out beautiful. So it was a pinhole micro click of reed beds and skies and stuff that came
out.
All right.
That's a good way to burn through a roll of film quick.
It is, yeah.
Where do you have that posted at, Andrew?
Oh, it'll be on the Flickr. Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably somewhere? On the Flickr somewhere. If you go in there and look in, I don't know what you're looking. It won't be that far back, you know, but yeah, you can see that. I think it's there.
Okay.
If not, I'll show you.
Oh, yeah.
I'll put it on. But yeah.
Now, I would have never thought of doing a micro click with a pinhole. That's a great idea.
A pinhole panoramic as well.
So. Gotcha. Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So you've got the, is it the 120N or something camera, is it, that you use?
Yes. Yeah. Just your basic, nothing fancy. And as a matter of fact, when they went out of, when I heard they were going out of business,
like everybody
I
else.
Started buying them up like crazy. Yeah. I've got probably 10 of them.
I've sold three, I think.
In different colors. Yeah, I can't imagine life without a whole.
They are being made, aren't they? If you go onto the bay now and look at them, there's some that are branded up Holger by Moonrise or something. I think some company out of China is making them. I have no idea. I was going to say if they're as good as a Holger, but you know, you know what I mean. If they have the same quirks. But yeah, no. Someone is making is making new Holgers again, but it's not the same. Not the same organization.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So I think you'll be all right.
All right. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Although I think really, honestly, I have enough to last me quite a while. So yeah, I think
my original is still going, I have to say. Yeah. So.
We're good.
I've got two or three.
Yeah.
What about pinhole then? Sorry. What about pinhole? Do you have any Holger pinhole cameras, or what pinhole cameras do you use?
I actually do have some pinhole cameras, and I was just thinking about them the other day, wondering if several of them made the move with me, because I'm not sure what I brought with me and what I didn't. But I had I want to say it was called Zero Image, 120 medium format pinhole. And I did some shooting with that more early on. I haven't done much pinhole in the last so many years. I don't even know. And I don't even know why. I think I just kind of like drifted away and got interested in something else. But I just recently got a Vivitar 35mm pinhole camera. Hmm. So I'm very interested to try that. So I just loaded up some film in there this morning, and I was thinking that like maybe this week I'll wander out into the snowy regions of my area and try some stuff.
35 millimeters, the devil's format. No, I don't get it. I just don't.
Why
get
do you
along
say that?
Well, it's just not my preferred. You know, I mean, it's perfectly fine. It's just one of my things, you know. I don't like trying to stand and deal with it. It's just not my thing.
For my recent birthday, I treated myself to a 35mm panoramic pinhole camera, the French one, Corée Le Rouge, is it? Le Rouge? Mm-hmm. A cute red bodied, simple wooden camera. It comes with a blank cassette, you know, a reloadable one, so you just take your film and tape it to the blank, and you do 1.5 clicks, I think, or 1.5 turns, sorry, for a panoramic, which is just over twice, I think, the 35mm frame. So that makes a slightly bigger image, and that's going to be fun. I've seen some people get some great results with it, so I'm just started playing with that, because I didn't really have a 35mm camera. I had the one that Graham, homemade camera, sent me. But I was quite taken with the idea of panoramic 35mm.
I like these on your Flickr, Amy. I like this idea of doing like a diptych, you know. I really like that. I like that idea. You can do that with like the half frames too. You know what I mean? I don't have a half-frame camera, so
yes,
I think
yes,
I'm probably the only person in the universe who uses the 6-4-5 mask in this whole gun. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one. And I think I'm going to try and do some of these, because some of these ones that you're doing looks like you were kind of doing the click, but it's not square, so I'm thinking maybe you just it got cropped out, but I don't know. These are awesome. I like them.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, some of them, like, I don't use that. There's like a mask mm-hmm. or something in there. I'm so it's non-technical. Okay. Forgive me. So I take that thing out and just kind of let the, so it's like sometimes the image kind of gets rounded or something sort of on the corners or whatever, which I like. Definitely. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You should totally try this with pinhole. That method with pinhole. I think
I sent, I emailed that picture I was talking about to you just a minute ago.
Oh, great. Okay.
But you're folks listening, if you go to Amy's Flickr site and just click on the album that's called Holger, and there's just some wonderful dreamlike images, and I think mm-hmm. some of them are with the clear center spot. And you know, I used to see those filters. I've been familiar with those sort of Kokin style clear center spot filters from years and years and years. But you make such good use of them. It's one of those you don't really see them being used that much, you know, but. You know, the dreamlike bit around the outside and the bit sharp in the middle, and it's you just do it so it works really well. So I love them.
Yeah, and this image Andrew, you have Amy's Flickr up in front of you.
Yeah.
Go to page 3.
Oh, what, in the photo stream? You have to bear with us here, folks.
Yeah.
Page 3. Oh, I hadn't gone that far down.
I've gone through the whole thing. And then scroll all the way to the bottom of the page.
Oh, maybe you've got page... On my piece... Oh, page 3. There we go. Yeah, well, Amy's been using her iPhone a lot to create some wonderful pictures as well. I'll say that as I'm scrolling down. So I'm looking at color pictures now on the bottom of page 3. Is that
okay, so there's 3. Yep. If you look right above those, there's mm-hmm. a series of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 images that looks like she's done the click advance. And the very first one, they just look, I don't know, just, I can't stop looking at them.
Okay. Amy's probably lost by now. I don't think she knows.
Well, I was going to say, I'm afraid to, you know,
no,
like,
they're awesome.
Get out of the app, because I'm afraid I'll cut us off.
Well,
so,
I'll tell you what it was, so Amy. I'm this not is sure. back from 2014. So it says, what you've written here is, and they are very hypnotic. I don't know what it is about them, but there's, so he says, fourth in a yet unnamed series, Holger 120N, Arista, something or other, Silver Gelatin Print. I've made about 6 of them series so far, and I will be posting them in sequence. I got the idea many months ago to try and create a series based on the process of recalling memories mm-hmm. or in formulating thoughts, particularly in the case of cognitive disorders such as Alzheimer's, dementia. I have no idea where this ultimately will go. So I don't know if these are in an album. I don't know if you've got these in an album, but there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe, yeah. And they're just like, fragments. Each one is like a little fragment of a memory, and they're not the same as your click pictures, are they?
No. What I did with those,
like maybe it was negatives. Yeah.
They are. That's exactly what I did. That's exactly what I did. I took negatives and I cut them up, and then like I took different pieces of different negatives and pieced them together, or I used just one negative and cut it up and then spliced it together with tape. And I wanted the tape to show. I wanted it to, I wanted it to be very crude. So... That was a project that I really enjoyed doing. It's been a while since
so
I've
the
done
very first one
that.
Of that group, Andrew, the reason that it looks like that, I see it now, is because Amy cut the negatives up and laid them in long strips beside each other and then went horizontally across them with scotch tape, because I can kind of like see a little bit of a fingerprint, and there's a little air bubble from like a little piece of dust on it. That's a good idea. Yeah. It looks awesome. They look great.
Well, So your day job was and is to an extent mental health counseling. Have you used photography or any of this stuff in your day job, or does it help you process some of the stuff that you must take away from those meetings with people, you know, discussions with people? So do you use this art to help you, or have you used it to chat with people that that you're helping?
That's a great question. And I think a little of both, Andrew. I think that it certainly is an extension of, it's what kind of comes out of me as a result of working with people. At the time I started the taping together of the negatives, a friend of mine, her mother had just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And that's what kind of got me started off on that. But even in my own practice, I take some of my own work in, and I also, some of the work, like I have a calendar from one of my very close Flickr friends, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say her name on the program or not. Her moniker is Experiments in Dreaming.
Right. Okay.
I believe it's what it used to be. Oh,
yes,
Falling Through the Lens.
Yeah,
no,
I always used to link her and you together somehow.
Yes, well, I think sometimes our work can be very similar, just in terms of like what we are drawn to. But like I remember at one time I was doing a therapy group that was really an intense group. It was people who had been hospitalized psychiatrically, and then this was like their step down from that process. And I just remember that I was really I saw a lot of Jack Experiments in Dreaming's work, and at that time, and it just would resonate so much of maybe something we had worked on that day. And so I would start using bits and pieces, not of the images themselves, but like what I would see in the images, and then using them as a metaphor when I would come into group maybe the next day for what we had talked about. So I think that I've used it interchangeably, not only as a means of expression for myself, but also absolutely as a therapeutic tool.
Mm, fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. I've, Falling Through the Lens. I hadn't put Experiments and Dreaming and Falling Through a Lens together, but now I can see it's the same person. And often I used to see images, and I would either think of you or think of Falling Through a Lens, and I didn't often know which one it was until I clicked on it, because it is a similar a similar body.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think you should definitely continue doing the Hoga click micro clips. These are all great. Some of them are beautiful. I like them.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean that series on, like, sorry, I keep coming back to it. That series on sort of memory and stuff. It's really interesting. I don't know if you've got any plans to pursue it again, you know, because I don't know, when did it get much further than 5 or 6 prints, Amy?
I want to say that I probably did maybe 7. I'm not sure. I think that like that'll probably be a process that will be halted until I get back into the dark room, because I'm not so sure that that's going to translate well digitally. I mean, I don't know. I guess that's something I could certainly try.
Many folks will have relatives who go through memory loss. I mean, my mum, before she died, suffered with vascular dementia, and she went from knowing who I was and having a pretty full set of memory to within a few days of, you know, passing out and waking up again.
Wow.
To not knowing who anybody was, she didn't even know she'd been married for 50 years, and I struggled to process that. I've never really focused it in photography, but you know that is such a how you realize something like that, you know, process those feelings that you might have. And I can see it being very therapeutic. And I think that's what you've done there. And thanks to Corey for sharing it, because I've missed those pictures of yours. But, you know, this idea of sort of piecing bits of memory together.
Somehow, you know. So we have all this theory and idea stuff out of the way. What are you're developing at home, Amy? You know, what's your system at home in chemistry or...
Yeah.
What's your favorite developer?
Well, I have a dog. I'm like, okay, so right now I have a dark bag. So thank heavens for that. So I can still at least do my own home developing. And I'm a standby person. You know, I don't understand enough about chemicals to really know what the difference between all
me
of
too.
The
don't worry.
Are. But I think, you know, everybody tries all this different stuff, and I think, I wonder why, because it looks the same to me as it did in the other.
That's not Andrew, he's the other guy.
No, I'm not. No, I stick pretty much to one or two developers. Yeah. Carry on, Amy. Don't pay any attention to my co-host.
My film developing is usually D76.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
And sometimes RO91 shot. RO91
That's
shot.
A take off of Rodinal, isn't it?
So I use
same
that
formula
sometimes.
Of Rodinal, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, but I would say almost exclusively D76. And when I print, I use Kodak's Dektol. Mm-hmm. That again, almost exclusively.
Well, you're constantly getting
so
the same tones and everything with it. You know, if you're doing it and you're sticking with the same thing, you'd always be. Have that your work will always have that same same look and, you know, consistency, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
I'm convinced that you can make stunning work with pretty much any film developer combination.
Yeah,
and it's a fruitless and thankless task to be constantly chasing your tail in search of the next magic bullet, be it film or developer combination. So stick with it and work on it and just. Get the best out of every combination that you use, but you don't need to keep chopping and changing. Amy, your folder, which is called Photo Impressionism, I also love, and I think we chatted a while back. In fact, you won't know this, but I remember we were shopping. Me and my missus were shopping in Peterborough City near us, probably about 8 or 9 years ago. And I you know, when men go shopping with their partners, I was sitting outside somewhere, bored to tears, and I was on the phone, and I saw some of your work, and I either messaged you or commented, and you recommended this book, Photo Impressionism, and the Subjective Image, by Freeman Patterson, and I've put folks listening, I put a link to it in the Lenses Podcast Facebook group a little while ago. And it's a great book. I mean, it's partly ideas based and it's partly technique based. But one of them is about creating sort of impressionistic images. And you've done it beautifully with a Holger and some black and white film. And I think it's kind of, you know, again, clicking, but not advancing, but then moving the camera either slightly to the left or slightly to the right and just doing multiple exposures that sort of on top of each other, sometimes up and down and round in circles. I think you can do all that, but it creates a wonderful, ethereal, bright, magical image. So say something about that.
Thank you. thank you, because I was just, when you were saying that, I was thinking about how many times, like when I show those particular types of photos to people, friends, they're like, it's too blurry. It's too blurry. And I'm like, the point. But so it's pretty much, like you said, it is just like, many multiple exposures, and I found that there's kind of a limit at some point where like you can go overboard, and then it does kind of look it's like overboard. And so I don't know, I think usually I go between like maybe 6 to 8, somewhere around there. And so sometimes I just stand completely still and just keep kind of photographing. And of course you can't, I say completely still. So you're not exactly, I'm not exactly standing completely still. There's going to be a little bit of camera movement. And so the scene may shift a little bit. But other times I do aim the camera, like I take one and then I maybe just tilt it slightly up and take one and then slightly down, or, you know, just kind of moving it ever so slightly. But not enough so that it's know, like a micro.
I think what it helps as well, why it works so well is some of these are taken in woodland scenes. So you've got lots of areas of dark. So you're going to be, your multiple exposures are going to be building up the density in the shadows. So you're going to get these gently exposed shadows because you're just multiple exposing. And then the highlights, which are like dappled highlights coming through the trees, will be somewhat blown away because they're, you know, big overexposure, but that just adds to the sort of ethereal beauty of it, with where the highlights just, then the highlights, because the highlights aren't dominating the scene, probably shadows are, and your multiple exposures gradually building up that shadow density, which with a Holger, let's face it, you just take a picture in that scene, your shadows would be completely blank, but because you're doing more than one, you're building up those shadows, and the highlights can do what they want to do, but it just adds to the beauty of the scene. And I'd commend folks listening to this album of Amy's in Flickr called Photo Impressionism, and read Freeman Patterson's book as well, which you can pick up pretty cheaply online, I think.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I lost my copy somewhere along the way, and I was trying to remember what the name of that book was. And I asked Experiments in Dreaming. We email back and forth. And so I asked her, and she said, would you be talking about Freeman Patterson's book? And I was like, yes. So I just found the book online pretty cheap, and just got it in the mail a couple weeks ago. So I'm excited to get back into that stuff again too.
But making the darkroom prints is the way. You need to get your darkroom built, Amy. That's my message too. Get your darkroom built.
I know. I really do. I feel like printing was actually always, I enjoyed that more than did taking the photographs, to tell you the truth. So I feel like I would have been one of those good, you know, people would have been really good if people said, hey, yeah, can you, you know, print out my photographs for me? And, you know, I'd have done well. Yeah, I'd have done well. So
the album you've got called Sacred Life of Trees, that's Pinhole. Yeah. We haven't really talked much about Pinhole, but that's okay. So why that title, and what's going on in this little series? The Sacred Life of Trees, which I think are all Pinhole. I'm not sure. Your Zero Image, I think.
Oh, there it is.
Yes, I believe all of them are.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I believe they're all Pinhole. I stumble on things. I don't necessarily have these grand designs in my mind when I do them. I just, you know, I remember standing, the first one I ever did, I remember standing at the bottom of a tree looking up, and it was early spring, so there wasn't much foliage or anything. And then just thinking to myself, I wonder what that would look like if I, you know, took a pinhole shot from this angle. And I rested the pinhole camera sort of slightly tilted upward against the trunk, and then just, you know, photographed, opened, exposed it, and took a bunch of those, and then brought them back home and developed them. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. You know, I just really was blown away by my own process there. And so, you know, I think I get like not bored easily, but it's like I find something else then, and then I move on, and then, you know, that series just sits. So I think it's been forever since I've done that. I don't even remember when the last time it was. So, you know, I moved on to my next project, but I always think of that because I find trees really to be kind of, not to be corny, but I find them as really sort of sacred. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like they kind of hold a lot of history that we're not privy to, you know, because they exist for so many years, you know. and they see things, or they're part of things. I don't want to see things, but they're part of things of history that, you know, we only kind of wonder about or you know, read about. But they were actually there, you know, as history was forming. So, that's why I called it the Sacred Life of Trees.
Well, that's a pretty good reason.
That was my idea. Mm-hmm.
I've just discovered another folder with another favorite camera of mine, the Pen EE3. Well, I have the Pen EE and the EE3,
oh,
and I'm forever doing these diptychs and triptychs.
I love those.
And they're just great, aren't they? I mean, the Pen EE and the Pen EE3, I think one goes up to a slightly higher film speed. I can't remember which one is, or maybe you can shoot with a higher rated speed film in it. But they're both great cameras. And yeah. And even the single shots. Sorry.
I don't remember. Oh, no, I was just going to say, I was trying to remember which one I had because I don't think I still have the camera anymore. Yeah. Don't ask me why, because I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But see, when you say that, I think, I've got to get another one. Because that was a fun camera to shoot.
People are very much wanting to get those interchangeable lens half-frame cameras, the Pen Fs and the Pen Fts. But actually, these little point-and-shoot cameras, the Pen EE has got the back on it. You pull it down like a Leica, you know, the back comes off. I can't remember what the E3 does as well, but certainly the EE does. And it's a solid little metal construction. The only thing is, in low light, it locks up, but then you can just set it in, you can just turn it onto manual effectively and just shoot wide open.
Okay.
You know, I've always, whenever I'm on holiday or wandering around in the city somewhere, I've always got that camera in my pocket because it's always just so much fun. Yeah, pretty much always. It's just so much fun. And people
it's a great little
bitch
camera.
About half-frame cameras because they said, you know, 72 frames. I said, no. No, just do diptychs and triptychs or whatever, you know, three, and you'll burn through the film, yeah. You know, and there's so much fun.
I might have to get me one of those cameras.
Yeah, because that's what I sort of thought to myself, I think, when I first got it was, wow, it's really hard to get
36
frames.
Yeah, it is. I hate
36 frames. And that's where I came up with the idea of, you know, you just do this, like, you know, dip tips and triptychs.
What's the island off San Francisco? Alcatraz.
Alcatraz.
And I had my pen.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Pen EE with me. In fact, all through a 23-day road trip, I'm in the middle of printing. I've been doing it for about 2 years now, trying to get this project done. Printing a series of road trip pictures and typing notes, travel notes. Anyone who follows me on Twitter or Instagram will see my pictures of my travel notes and some of the prints I've been doing. But recently I've been making some 12 by 9.5 fiber pictures from this Pen EE, Amy. And I was working in a series of three images, so I was deliberately aiming for triptychs. And on Alcatraz, there's an American flag and a tower. And I'd got three frames of this flag, slightly different, and I printed it in three in a row in the middle of a big white border, and it just works really well as big prints, you know. And I think I was using probably Delta 400, yeah. So grain wasn't an issue, you know. And it's they just make wonderful prints, and I've got a load more to do. And it is Corey. Yeah, it's such a fun camera, that Pen EE. Any of them. I think the EE3, you can set it at a higher film speed, or maybe it's got a higher shutter speed, something like that. But they're all good. So buy more than one, that's what I'd say.
Well, I'm going to go on eBay later on today, and I'll be finding myself one. But I think that's wonderful, Andrew. That sounds like such an exciting project with what you were just saying, the travel pictures, you know, what fun, really. And the idea of, I don't know if I ever actually printed any of mine. I think that I might have still been doing digital at that time. I might not have had a darkroom because I got the most distinct picture when you were saying that. And I thought, oh, gosh, yeah, with that white border, that would just be beautiful. Beautiful. So I hope you post some of that stuff on Flickr.
Yeah, I don't think I have really at the moment. Some of the prints I've been just photographing, hanging up in the darkroom, but I've not really shared much of it, really. I think the triptych one I did share somewhere, but I don't think I put it on Flickr, I might be wrong. I don't know. But yeah, get yourself a Pen EE if you haven't got one.
There seems to be a lot of them in Japan because I'm looking at eBay right now. And
yeah. Japan. What are they?
Oh, there's one from South Korea. No, I don't know. They're not too bad. I mean, there's ranging from $324 down to $35 bucks.
Yeah. No, you don't need to pay $300. Goodness
me. Oh, don't worry. Yeah. I won't be.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I don't think I paid. I may have paid like 35 or 40 bucks for mine when I first got one. So, yeah.
So...
But, yeah, lots of you're wonderful cameras out there.
You're doing,
a bit of,
you're doing some lovely work with the Hipstamatic, whatever that is, iPhonography. Is this helping you still realize your creativity without darkroom? Because sometimes I look at these iPhone pictures and think, you don't really need a darkroom.
Well, yeah, it's not at all satisfying. I mean, it's the app does the work for you, in other words. And so it's just a matter of taking the photograph. It would never be a replacement for the darkroom. And even the digital darkroom to me is, it can be fun and engrossing in a very different way, but there's something so organic and tactile in the darkroom, in the wet darkroom. I was never been a person that takes my pictures out of the trays or my prints out of the trays with chalks. I always use my finger and I always have a, I pull up out of the corner because I always do a border anyway. But I pull up off the corner and then wipe my fingers on a towel slung over my shoulder, you know, and put it in the next thing. And it's something so wonderfully tactile and organic and just nothing like being in there with a, red lights and
you're getting excited about going back in the dark. Right? I can tell.
I am. I miss it. I really do. I
have two or three Dianas, I struggle to fall in love with the Diana camera, and I'm falling more in love with it. I've got one of the original 1960s, and then I've got the Lomography version. But I much prefer the Holger. And I see you've got, or you did have, or you've still got a Diana. But you've got nowhere near as many photographs on Flickr with your Diana as you've got the Holger. Is that because you don't love the Diana as much as the Holger?
I think that the Diana, the thing I always appreciated about the Diana was that smaller frame image. Than the old Holga would make, but I think that mine broke. I mean, if I remember correctly, the shutter stopped working.
Was it one of the original? It wasn't. Yeah, it looks like one of the original ones. So yeah, they're like four by four, aren't they? Smaller squares. Yeah.
Yeah, there was something kind of cool about that to me. So. If I could find another working Diana that's original on eBay and not pay an arm and a leg for it, I'd go for it. But I think that's the only reason that I do more work with the Diana.
Well, yeah, with the modern Lomography version, you've got like the flash sockets, haven't you? And you can take the lenses off, whereas the original Diana, you can't take the lenses off. And it becomes a pinhole camera. The later Diana F, the Lomography one becomes a pinhole camera. But I've never had much luck with it. Have you ever shot pinhole with a Diana, Corey?
I have one. I have a Diana, but it's one of the newer ones.
Yeah. But that you can take the lens off. The lens unscrews, doesn't it?
It has a pinhole, but it's a mini Diana, actually. And I kind of never actually, somebody just is like, here, I don't want this anymore. They found it, and their camera stuff. And I never actually got around to using it, but it was a tiny little thing. And I think it did have a pinhole in it.
Yeah.
I just never used it.
No. No, I tried a couple of shots with a pinhole. You take the lens off, Amy, and it becomes a pinhole camera. It's creatively magical.
That is so wild. What do you do? What do you use, like the little plastic lens cover over top of it? Then
I can't remember. I'm going to use it a couple of times. Someone out there will.
Doesn't it have a shutter? You have to re-cock it. So yeah, I guess she's right. Maybe you have to put your finger over it or something when you cock it.
I'm reaching up onto the top of my cupboard now and bringing down my Diana F plus.
Andrew's going to enlighten us with his years and years and years of camera experience.
Well, I don't ever use it really, and I do you take the lens off? I can't remember now. Got it here. You can hear it. Look, there you go, Amy. That's the sound of a Holger F plus. And I did it. I actually used this a lot in lockdown last year. I shot a series of lockdown portraits with Portra. I stuck Portra 160 in it, I think, and I used some really expired chemicals and got some really quirky colours. And there was I put so much film through it. I worked out where the sweet spot was on the lens, you know, for focus. So what do you do? Yeah, oh, you set it to pinhole, and then do you have to take something off? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. The front of the lens falls off. I've done it now. And underneath, you've got the pinhole, and you can just use the shutter. So you set it to B, set it to bulb mode.
Oh.
Open, close, and I've tried it, and I got rubbish results, I have to say. But that was probably just me. So, yeah, so now I've got the back off, and I've got the lens off. So it leaves the most of the body of the lens there, but the actual front element pops off, and underneath you've got the pinhole. So you then, instead of setting the setting to cloudy, partially cloudy, sunny, right at the end there's a P for pinhole, and as I got it on B and I've got the lens got the pinhole open, I can see there's a tiny pinhole, which must be I don't know how big it is. I'll have to measure it. It looks a fairly large size pinhole, really. So, yeah, so the Diana F Plus is quite versatile. You know, you can do your 6x6 or, God, what's the other size you can do with the F Plus? I can't remember. But you can use it as a pinhole camera as well. And with the F Plus, Amy, you can get instant backs for it as well if you want to. And you can get a 35mm back as well to do sprockets and stuff. So, creatively, I guess the F Plus is a quite a creative, you know, plastic toy, creative tool.
Yes.
Probably more creative all in a way than the original Diana, as much as I love the original. But the Lomography version is pretty creative. So there you go. Diana. But yeah, I've always loved the Holger more.
Did not know that.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I do too. Yep, me too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, like I said, I probably would have used the Diana more, but the Holger has become like the camera that I know I can't live without.
I have one that lives in my van.
Absolutely. It's
probably
favorite.
Horrible for the film, but you know, if I take it out, I forget it at home. And if I take it with me, I never need it. It's one of those, you know, it's kind of so weird.
Do you still kayak, Amy? Still kayak? I noticed that you took some shots from your kayak.
Yes, I do still kayak. As a matter of fact, I was just thinking about how excited I am for the weather to start getting warmer so I can get back out in the kayak. Now that, talk about a game changer, being out on the water and photographing. It's just really, it's one of the most fun experiences I think I've ever had. And I almost prefer it to shooting on land because, you know, that movement of the water just kind of adds to the unpredictability of what's going to happen when you're shooting. So, and I love lots of just the perspective. I mean, how can you get a perspective anywhere else but on the water like that?
Sometimes you can.
And I think the Holger's perfect for that because when you're out on the river in a kayak, you know, you want to be pointing and shooting, don't you? You don't want to be faffing around trying to set apertures or, you know, let's face it, if you drop the Holger in the water, it's probably not the end of the world, but it would be if you drop something
always
else.
Always my
there.
Thought.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, we look forward to no snow and we look forward to bright weather. Me too. I have a inflatable kayak, which I take out on the river and it's just a load of fun. I love it. So
oh good. Now what's weather like there for you? I mean, long before you're out kayaking, Andrew?
Probably another couple of months, I would have thought, really, because I'm a fair weather kayak. I'm not like going out there in rough weather, you know. Plus we've been in lockdown phase 3 since early January. And you're not really, you're only supposed to take exercise in your local area. Some people abuse that, you know, and drive places and go to exercise, but we tend to just walk from the house. The picture gotcha. I love, and we'll just finish on that you took from your kayak. Corey, if you go into Amy's mm-hmm. Life on the Water series, then right at the bottom, before that panoramic reed photograph, is a very, very simple picture of water lily flower. And the flowers, there's like a double, it's a double exposure, I think. Mm-hmm. Or is it clicks?
Oh,
I don't know whether
yeah.
it's clicks or double, whatever it is. Yeah. It's just beautiful.
It's a double exposure, I think.
Brilliantly white lilies, and then the pads, lily pads.
Oh, yeah. I was looking at that one earlier. Yep, I know exactly the one you're talking about. Mm, and yep. the lilies are nice and almost kind of like stark white against all that black and dark. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun one to print. That was a fun one to print. Cool. I enjoyed that. Definitely. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I like all these. I like those. The ones with the clouds. I'm a cloud guy for some reason. I don't know. I don't know what it is about it. I like clouds. And
me too.
So I always appreciate a good. I call those Simpsons clouds. You know the show The Simpsons? At the beginning, the sky looks just like that.
Yeah.
So I call those Simpson cloud days. Which if you have a neutral density filter or some way to slow it down, and you can get those just to blur for a couple seconds, those are the best clouds to. You know, to have with light speed clouds, I call them too, when they're moving real fast like that. You can see all that movement. Yeah, cool. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, see, I like that idea.
I have good ideas.
You have one or two in every moment. Amy, it's been a delight. It's lovely to catch up with you after, you know, a number of years of sort of interacting on Flickr. And I've shared.
He's
you
not
won't know
lying.
This, but
he's
I've
been stalking you, Amy. Just go ahead and just accept it.
I've shared your Flickr album or your Flickr site both on my Twitter feed and in the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, because you know, unless folks are on Flickr, they may not have stumbled over you. So yeah, you might get a few more follows
That's
and friends
wonderful.
And comments. Who knows? But
well, I'll check out the podcast on Facebook. Although I never go on Facebook, I do have.
You should.
Well,
you'll enjoy it.
I'll check out
a
the
Lensbrook. A lot of interaction.
Yeah,
it's nice,
and it's a real friendly group of people.
Nice.
I mean, it's been up and running a couple of years now. And I don't think we've ever had to step in and tell anybody off. You know,
hey, get out of here.
Yeah. And it's just real nice. Yeah. And I think the podcast and the
Wonderful.
Facebook group work very much hand in hand. They complement each other, don't they, Corey? Because often it's a good vehicle for, you know, sharing pictures. Like I'll post some of your pictures into the Facebook group. I've already done so. I'll do a few more, you know, and folks go on and, you know,
share
stuff and check it out. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good. It is good. Yeah, so I commend it to you.
Wonderful.
And it's a good place to even find things. If you couldn't find your zero image before you went and bought one, I'd go in there and ask anybody, hey, does anybody have, you know, stuff? Because people get gas and get something else, and in order to get this, they kind of need to get rid of that, you know? And some people hang on to them forever, but I'm one of those people, like, I'm into what I think right then, and once I'm over something or I don't like something about it. It could be anything besides, you know, something, whatever turns off and you just like, I don't want to use it anymore. Then that's it. And, you know, so sometimes you can get a deal on stuff. You know?
Right.
Doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah. I've just clicked on another folder.
Great idea.
We've gone over time, but I've just clicked on another folder called 127 Film. And I'm a massive fan of 127 Film.
127 Film Day or 127?
Well, no, the film.
Oh, yeah.
So Amy was using Yashica LM44. I have a Yashica 44.
Nice.
Bellora Bella 44. Bellora Bella. There you go. That's Italian. Ansco Cadet Imperial Mercury Satellite. So, wow. The one that drew me, mainly because it looks kind of grungy and weird things going on with it, is a building with kind of black spots all over it.
Right.
That you Sawyer's.
I know what you're talking about.
Ansco All Weather 127.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going on there, but. Boy, it's a great show.
Yes.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know, honestly, how that even happened. I mean, like, the whole role turned out like that. The film was like 1957 or something. So I'm assuming, you know, it was old. I just remember that. But yeah.
In that picture, you're looking at that picture right now, right, Andrew?
Mm-hmm.
Right,
Andrew? Yeah, yeah.
In the middle of that picture, you see the two towers that are sticking up on the skyline? There's two towers you're looking at.
Oh, well, you're looking, I think you're looking at a different picture.
No, I'm looking at Sawyer's Nomad 127 ANSCO All-Weather Film.
No, I was looking at how do you get from there. But anyway, I think it's in the same role. You're looking at Soliloquy, are you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Soliloquy. Yeah. Okay. So the two towers pointing up, little churchy towers, yeah?
If you look down and just to the right, there's like a white blob. It looks like Albert Einstein.
Yeah. And you could, if you hover over it, it says gifted hacks deleted.
Deleted question mark.
What's that all about?
I don't know. I didn't mean to interrupt, Jamie. I'm sorry. It looks just like Albert Einstein.
No.
Yeah,
could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I see weird things and stuff a lot.
So
I'm going to have to check it out now. I'll have to check it out.
It's part of the same role because there's all these black spots just down to it. But it's a great scene, and there's a skyline with these two towers, two church pointed towers type thing. And then underneath there's this little figure thing.
And it looks like a bobblehead.
when you push your cursor over it, it highlights it and says "gifted cats deleted?" question mark. And it looks like Albert Einstein.
It does.
Yeah, I've no idea, Amy. No idea. We don't know. We don't know. I'm zooming in on it now.
Wow, it's a mystery to me.
That's awesome. Cool.
There we are. So are you still 127 film? It's kind of expensive to buy new, or you have to cut it down yourself. So you still managing to expose any 127 film?
I haven't in a while. I know that Experiments in Dreaming does that 127 day thing a couple times a year, and I've participated in that. But I think that most of my – I have probably maybe 10 rolls of 127, but they're all really old. I just don't use them that often. And I think the only 127 camera I still have is my Sawyer Nomad. That's my favorite.
I have the Yashica 44 with the winding handle, and it is just a beautiful. I just love it. It's a beautiful camera, and I've got a stash of 127 film that I bought over the years, and I cut stuff down myself using what's his name, Facmatic, Italian guy. He's online, and he makes a rather neat, if somewhat overly complicated, slitter, you know, for cutting down your 120 film.
A slitter?
Yeah.
A slitter, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
If you want to keep using, it means you can cut down your HP5 or your favorite emulsions, cool. You know? Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. True enough, yeah. It's a great idea. It's just but more work than I think I would ever want to go through. Amy. So
you've got nothing to do but slip film. Yeah. What else are you going to do all day long?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Slip film.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful stuff.
Thanks for coming, Amy.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been lovely talking with both of you. Thank you so much. And Andrew, wonderful to finally, speak to you. And Corey, very nice to have met you and talk with you.
Stay safe. Thank you. And happy kayaking when the weather picks up.
Same to you. Same to you, both of you. Stay safe. Right. Take care.
Okay.
Okay, I think I got it.
All right.
Can you hear me?
Hello, Andrew.
Yeah.
Hey.
Can you hear me? I'm the important one.
No, he's not. Take the notice.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 104, and this week's guest is Wendy Chapman.